Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Relax. All right? My old man is a television repairman. Got the ultimate set of tools. I can fix it.
With Dusty Fan Man Hera.
I know Kung Fu.
And former pro Cam Cleland.
You ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself, a little less time worrying about what your brother does.
Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080.
Pucker up, buttercup.
The Fan.
All right, it is hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the morning. Thank you for being a part of our morning, letting us be a part of yours. Oh, keep your movies coming in that could be adapted for TV shows. Those are good. And we're getting some pretty decent ones in there, like Tin Cup, Just Follow the Caddies Around. Caddy life is something that is fascinating to me. They are interesting people, and it's not quite Caddyshack. It's not quite Happy Gilmore, where you got the homeless guy with one shoe. Which maybe that is still, it makes me chuckle every single time when he marks a ball with a cracker, and when he says, I think it goes left to right, he's like, you're just wearing one shoe.
Awesome.
Every day I'm trying.
Yeah.
Gets me. But keep those coming in on the fan text line, 503-250-1080. All right. The Portland Trailblazers come up with another huge win last night in the bubble, 125-115, knocking off the Denver Nuggets. Now just sitting a half game back of Memphis for the eighth playoff spot. And now this is something that the Blazers are in a situation where we thought that they would have a chance to get into that 8-9 play-in games where the Blazers would have to win two. The eight seed would only have to win one game. Portland is in a situation now where if they can close this thing out in their final four games in the bubble, they could be the team that only has to win one now. Yeah. With the Memphis Grizzlies still in a free fall.
It looked like a serious uphill battle, and right now I think you could argue that they have the upper hand in this thing.
They do, because momentum is a son of a gun, and we hear about it. We talk about this in every single sport, riding momentum and how that will play, right? We talked about being in the bubble and how not having a home court may be a disadvantage to some of the younger teams who feed off of it, or an advantage to some of the veteran teams who, you know, get a younger team on the road and they don't know how to quite react in crucial situations and pivotal moments. Well, what we're seeing now is veteran leadership is coming up more than ever before. And the Blazers with Dame, you have the other teams that are making charges in the bubble, the San Antonio Spurs, they're doing it on vets, man. And they're doing it with leadership. And one guy that has been consistent with his message since the beginning of the shutdown and when basketball would return and if it would be in the bubble is Damian Lillard. And the message has been clear from the time the NBA shut down to the restart right now. Just give us a chance.
You guys know me pretty well by now, or y'all know that I'm always optimistic and I always see the best in situations, especially a situation like this. And it was also why I said what I said, you know, months ago, when I said, if we don't have a chance to compete for a playoff spot, I don't want to play. Because I knew that if we did have a chance to play for a playoff spot, you know, it would look something like it looks right now, because we are a more healthy team. You know, we are more rested. And I knew what our team was doing. Guys was, you know, getting conditioning in, and we stayed in contact. As soon as we opened up our facility, guys were there every day. You know, I knew that once we got here, you know, we would be one of the teams that could take advantage of it. And so far we have.
And something that we talked about earlier was, you know, there's knowing that you have your stars that are going to be there and they're going to ball out no matter what. And last night was a special performance from Lillard again, 45 points, 12 rebounds, hits 11 threes. And they set a franchise record for three pointers made in a game. They went 23 of 39 from beyond the arc, by the way, 59% from three. Good gracious. That is an amazing shooting night for the Blazers. And they needed every single one of them because Denver wasn't going away in that game, but you knew the stars were going to show up and show out. The emergence of Gary Trent Jr., the fact that Nurk continues to play at such a high level immediately coming back from that injury. This team got their shot. There's a door that's open and they're kicking it wide open.
And there's something that's really satisfying about that Dame audio clip to me, because everybody talks now. Everyone has something to say about what their team deserves, that they should have a shot, that they should have a look at this thing. And Dame is a guy that consistently backs up whatever he says. And he said, you need to include us because we need a shot. And if you give us a shot, we're going to go and take it. And it's exactly what they're doing. And there aren't many guys that could essentially will their team to doing that. And last night you saw him put them over the hump, but you're right. You see guys like Gary Trent emerging, like Nurk coming back and being maybe in the best form we've ever seen him in. And all of a sudden you're like, this team does have the juice. They are for real.
And that is one thing to me that you can't say enough about Dame, but Terry Stotts gets overlooked.
Yep, sure does.
For the Portland Trailblazers a lot. And I briefly brought up the fact that, and I still can't remember who it was that said, you know, give Terry Stotts a ton of credit it's Patrick Beverley. It was Patrick Beverley on JJ Redick's podcast who said it was when he was talking about the toughest guy to defend was Damian Lillard, and that you got to give a lot of credit to their system in allowing him to thrive. And I think that is something that it gets lost in the shuffle, is that offensively there are opportunities for guys to thrive in a variety of ways and so many different avenues for guys to score, where, you know, in the conversation we were bringing up yesterday, it was about Carmelo Anthony, right? And allowing Carmelo Anthony to back guys down or come open in corner threes, you know, trusting Gary Trent Jr. to, hey, fire away, man. Just let her rip. The pick and roll game between Dame and Yusuf Nurkic, there's so many variations of how they can attack you, and each guy's skill set is emphasized, you know? And I know that should be like the no-brainer in professional sports, but it's not
that
not.
Easy. It's not
it
that
isn't.
Easy.
I mean, look at the fact that Chris Paul didn't work in Houston. Right. There are systems where guys don't work. And now I know they were good and they won a lot of regular season games, but to the level that people expected. And now in Billy Donovan's system, Chris Paul's thriving with guys around him.
Well, and the other thing that I think is interesting here is that you have a situation where CJ McCollum really hasn't done much yet. And usually he's the guy that has to have it going if Dame doesn't. And the fact that right now you could say that so far in the bubble, CJ is probably only your fourth best player. When he finds it and turns it on, that just adds another level. Usually you're so reliant on both Dame and CJ doing their thing that when you do have contributions from other places you weren't necessarily originally expecting it, it does give your stars a little bit of a break. And then when they do turn it on, it'll take you to another level.
You just think of, there would be criticisms of CJ McCollum if Gary Trent Jr. and Yusuf Nurkic weren't playing as well as they are.
Totally.
Because CJ, but the fact that they're playing at the level that they are, it's like CJ scores 13 and he's efficient 3 of 5 from beyond the arc, right? He was only 4 of 15 from the field. And those were games that CJ would have been criticized for.
Uh-huh.
Because he only shot 4 of 15 and you only score 13 points, you need to bear a bigger load. Well, he was impacting the game in different ways last night. And, you know, he went for 13, 6, and 6, which is a pretty pedestrian stat line, all things considered, especially if you're looking for your number two.
Exactly. And that's just it, is if you're expecting him to give you number two production, you look at that stat line and think, that ain't it. But when you have guys stepping up, that's okay.
And there is a margin for error when you're getting 27 off the bench from Gary Trent Jr. And finding tinkering with the lineup, but not, you know, one of the criticisms of Stotts early in the year is he messes with the lineup more than almost anybody else in the NBA, where his starting lineup, his rotation, where guys come in, but by the end of the year, it's all dialed in. Well, that closing lineup now that includes Gary Trent Jr. in it is something where they're putting the clamps down on teams. And you have a guy who's bought into his role in Gary Trent Jr., who is a 3-and-D guy. He is a 3-and-D guy. Now, he's not like an elite 3-and-D guy, but he's shooting the lights out right now, and it's effort on the defensive end and buy-in.
And, a guy like that, he's proven now what a threat he is over four games, and other teams, regardless of whether he has it or not, now have to respect that he can make those shots. And then I think that just helps Dame more in the long run. I mean, if people have to respect one more shooter, that's someone that stretches the floor a little bit more and provides more operating space for your best player.
Yeah, and there is going to be a moment where Gary Trent Jr. in his role, well, there's going to be the cries, right? We already get him on the text line, like, hey, now's the time to trade CJ. But this team has been waiting for punch off the bench.
Yeah.
This is a legitimate punch off the bench. It's a legitimate punch off the bench. And when you think of what this team may look like next season, if Trevor Ariza back, you know, if Rodney Hood ends up coming back and being, you know, a guy that you can rely on defensively, Again, he has a torn Achilles. I don't know what he's going to look like coming back, but it's not the death sentence that it once was for a basketball player to have an Achilles surgery. So you look at those things, like now you're starting to stack this thing up to where one of the great things about Denver is the depth that they've been able to build. And they were able to go and take a flyer on a guy like Michael Porter Jr., who was a projected number one pick, who had two major back surgeries. And is a guy that they went, all right, at 14, we have the luxury to take a guy like that. You know, take that high risk guy instead of a project guy.
Because that's what the Blazers have been trying to do. I mean, because they didn't have a glaring need, they're like, we can take a shot at this.
And that is where, you know, when you start kind of stacking that depth on depth, the Blazers could be in a good spot next year to make a legitimate charge in the top three of the Western Conference, right? But the idea is that, you know, the Blazers, if they do get the 8 seed, we talked about this, and look, as long as you don't have a guy that can stop LeBron James, or not just, no, I need to stop myself from saying this. You don't stop LeBron James, but slow him down just a little bit, right? Because that is where the Lakers will have issues, is if you have that roadblock, right? And that speed bump that LeBron kind of has to pump the brakes to get over the top of. But if you don't have that guy, then you're not beating the Lakers. And I know that a lot is being made right now of the Lakers are dreadful shooting right now in the bubble, especially from beyond the arc. Anthony Slater, who covers the Warriors and Lakers for The Athletic, he said that the Lakers, by going 5 of 37 from 3 against OKC in their loss, they're now 35 of 139 in the bubble.
That's not good. That is not good.
25%. Think of it in these terms. The Blazers made 23 threes in one game last night. Now, that was a franchise record, but in the bubble itself, the Lakers have only made 12 more threes.
Yeah, that's not good.
And if you cannot shoot, it is a shooter's league. Can you catch them? Yes. And this is where it comes down to, you know, if the Blazers do end up getting that 8 seed and are playing the Lakers in the 1 seed, will they be able to steal a game if they have shooting slumps and struggles like that? Absolutely.
Right. If you can purely outscore them because you can get a higher volume of those 3-point shots, that there's a real opportunity there if they are cold and stay cold. Now, I don't know that people expect that 3-point shooting to stay the same, but if the Lakers really are kind of relegated to just being a 2-point field goal making team, then they are vulnerable. Because the rest of the league is a 3-point making league now.
Yeah. And that is the big thing right now is with, you know, they brought Danny Green in to be that outside shooter, and he's not delivering from beyond the arc. But does shooters go through cold spells? Will he bounce back when he does? I mean, that's the big equalizer for a team like the Lakers.
Except for Gary Trent, who's going to cool off never.
Never. Ever, ever, ever. Speaking of cooling off, CJ McCollum is a monster. He is a monster. And it's not because of basketball. I will tell you about that. Plus, we need to get some PGA championship chatter in, because we have the another layer to the Bryson DeChambeau versus Brooks Koepka saga and Tiger's putter. That was a big story heading into the day. It's not anymore. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Waiting on some beautiful boy to save you. All right, see, we finish up our Blazers talk. We'll have more coming up as the show goes on, because we got some audios from Frank Vogel, the Lakers head coach, on their shooting slump and their shooting woes. But to just put a bow on it for now, CJ McCollum is a monster, and I don't know what to do, but I think we need to talk to CJ about this. There is a report from ESPN that CJ McCollum is keeping his room in the bubble at 50 degrees.
It's really cold, man.
When he is not in the room, he keeps it at 50 degrees. And when he is in the room, it's either in the high 50s or 60 degrees. As a person that hates being cold, like in the 50s is not that cold, right? But when you're indoors, that is freezing.
That is, you have to wear extra layers inside cold.
Now, there is a reason behind it, because he's got his wine. Was it Vintage 91, I think is what it's called? He has his wine, but he brought 84 bottles down to the bubble. Solid move by you. To hand out to players around the league, because look, how did Beats by Dre become popular?
By giving people Beats by Dre.
Giving them to LeBron James, who was wearing them into the arena. Giving them to NBA players who were wearing them into the arena, and NFL players, where they do that walk-in shot off the loading dock there towards the locker room. They always had the Beats by Dre around their neck, and then all of a sudden, boom, it blows up. You have influencers in the NBA, and a lot of these guys are wine drinkers. And ESPN was saying that, you know, with wine being such a big thing down there, CJ is using his room as a wine cellar. Which I get on board with. Hey, you got your side hustle? You make that hustle work.
Yeah, and you know what?
It's 50 degrees!
If you're going to be forced to be somewhere away from home for potentially months at a time, do you, man. Make it work for you.
That's right. You have nobody else that you need to worry about in that room, you know? Even when his fiance comes down.
And you know what? It ain't your power bill. You're not paying for that AC.
What a great point there. Not like he'd be really worried about that. I think he can cover his power.
Obviously.
His electricity bill. But when you don't have to worry about it, you do things that when you don't have to worry about. Like, if I leave a hotel room and every light is on, I don't think twice about it. I do not think twice about it. But when I'm at home, every light in that house better be off when I leave, damn it. You know? Not going to happen. CJ, you are a monster, but I appreciate the hustle. 50 degrees. My God. What do you sleep in your house at? I'm at 70.
68.
Yeah. And that's chill. Gets chilly at night, though.
That is my preference. Actually, we probably are closer to 70. My preference is 68.
All right. A monster? As a dude who runs hot and is in the wine business, CJ's room is life goals.
I didn't really think about it, though. Like, how, you know, what this would do for CJ's wine business, the bubble. I mean, honestly, if you are a player who is partnered with something, either corporate or you're trying to sell something or get in the business of something, the bubble is the perfect scenario for you right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, you're going to have a lot of guys going into business together.
From Pat Bev's white t-shirt business to CJ selling wine.
Look, Patrick Beverley, him selling a stack of Hanes t-shirts because he knew people wouldn't come prepared, that is akin to like the guy who sells stuff out of the trunk of his car at the park.
Exactly.
CJ's hustle is a little bit different. You know, you have such a wide breadth of
there's a big gap there.
Game going on at the NBA bubble. You know, you got a little bit of everything going on.
But we brought this up earlier in the week. Like, what would you bring to the bubble? That's why I have to bring the meat smoker, because I want to be sharing that barbecue with the world.
But Buck, you're not going to profit off of that. Like, at least CJ sitting there like, I'm going to make some money off this. I bet you Patrick Beverley's charging $100 a t-shirt there.
I would charge $100 for a pulled pork sandwich.
I doubt you would.
No, I know.
I doubt you would. PGA Championship. First round in the books yesterday at Harding Park in San Francisco. And they're making a big deal of how miserable the weather is down there.
It's not miserable. It's just heavy. Thick air.
Is it like that like year round though? Like all year? This is August and it's like high of 60
well,
something.
So that's the thing. The thing that always surprises people going through San Francisco in the summer is that the traditional summer months are not the best months there. The best kind of summer weather you're going to get is probably going to hit mid to late October. But so right now it probably feels more like fall and it's not going to get, I mean, the sun breaks through, but you get a ton of wind and a ton of fog this time of year in San Francisco and South San Francisco where this tournament is.
Now we have, yesterday we talked about Bryson DeChambeau's personal trainer coming out and saying, guys, he's not on steroids. He's been working on this for 2 years to ramp up his body, to put on weight in a hurry and do it quickly and efficiently and healthy. And he gave the person, of course, the personal trainer, like, nudge, nudge, hey, he's not on steroids. Of course he's not. And I do buy the what they're talking about with, he worked on changing his frame and making sure his muscles were ready and lean before he started lifting heavy, and then changed his diet completely to add the caloric intake that it needed to put on the weight. I buy that and I believe that. But a little layer to the Bryson DeChambeau on Roy's crew, it got a little bit more when he broke his driver in half bending over to pick up his ball or his tee yesterday. That was one of the weirdest things. Like, I've seen some weird stuff, like driver heads flying off when you hit the ball, you know?
Right, I've seen that, yeah.
And you don't see that on the PGA Tour. Like, you don't see clubs breaking very often on the tour.
Nor should you, because these guys are professionals and they should know how to use the equipment that they brought with them to the tournament.
He snapped that bad boy in half, and he was able to bring in a new driver because I guess if you don't do it in anger, you can replace your shaft.
So two things about this.
Sure.
I think for one, I wish that. So first of all, how do you even accomplish that? I know how he did it, but yeah. Being a pro golfer, I don't get how you get your driver in your own way picking up the tee. Like, why would that happen?
See, because he's so jacked on roids.
That he doesn't even know his own body?
Yeah. No, I mean, he just leaned on it. It was a freak accident. You know, those weird things happen.
But I thought he stepped on it. He leaned on it and stepped on it.
Yeah, kind of his foot kind of went on the head of the driver, and then he leaned on it a little bit. I don't know what the hell happened.
Well, yeah, no, I don't either. I just think it's weird and borderline, I mean, not borderline, it's clumsy for a professional athlete to do that. But the other thing is, you said it happens almost never, that this sort of like a club just breaking. I think you should have to deal with it. Why should he get a new one?
Well, because it wasn't his fault, man.
It was his fault. He stepped on it. It was absolutely his fault.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just think it'd be more fun once in a while when this happens that he has to scramble and figure something else out.
So a baseball player, it breaks his bat and he's just standing
totally
there?
Totally different. But broken bats happen all the time in baseball, and they're supposed to.
And they're supposed to.
For pitchers, yeah, they want to break guys' bats.
So, but it is the same kind of deal, though. I mean, I know it's completely different because it's baseball, and it's what you're hitting with.
I mean, it's
your tool that you're using out there.
Well, he shouldn't have stepped on it then.
I think it's ridiculous that they have a limit on how many clubs you can have in your bag. Why?
Well, because then you could just have every degree for every distance ever. And
so?
Yeah.
Tear it up. Let's go.
Okay.
I want to see 35 under. Show it to me.
Make your caddy a real Sherpa and have him just like bring 60 clubs around.
And you know that wouldn't be true, because what would happen is that these guys would overthink themselves and they'd screw it up every time. You know?
Especially Bryson.
Paralysis by analysis. And we have a new layer to his rivalry with Brooks Koepka too.
I was going to say though, if you gave Bryson more clubs to choose from, Brooks Koepka's head might just explode.
Yeah, but all he needs is like four. He's good. Just give him a putter. A driver,
well, no, I meant just that if Bryson takes any more time to hit the ball, Brooks' head's going to explode.
That is very true. So there, if you don't know, Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka's beef started back in January. Okay, on a live stream, DeChambeau said of Brooks Koepka's body, "I don't know if it's his genetics even make him look good. To be honest, I mean the body issue. He didn't even have any abs. I can tell you that. I've got some abs." And to which Brooks Koepka, the famous tweet of him in his entryway of his home with his four major trophies saying, "Oh, too short of a six pack," you know, great little troll there.
Excellent response.
Brooks has also trolled him with Kenny Powers memes on Twitter.
Yes.
About I'm not on steroids. Right. Yesterday, it was a little bit more of a subtle shot at Bryson DeChambeau. After his 4 under 66, Koepka was talking to reporters And he said, you know, I'm just feeling good. I'm playing good. There's no reason to be scientific with all the numbers and stuff like that on track, man. Just go out and play. Which is the little subtle jabs he's taking at DeChambeau. And DeChambeau, after the six-pack, too short of a six-pack, he backed off of Brooks Koepka. Brooks will not let this go.
No, and you know what? The other thing, too, remember the whole fire ant thing with DeChambeau last week where he didn't want to get off of an anthill? Brooks trolled him over the weekend, too, when the camera was on him and he knew the camera was on him. He was about to hit his ball. He looks at his caddy. He goes, uh-oh, is that an ant? Is that a fire ant? And like, and it wasn't. He just wanted to troll. He wanted to troll Bryson again.
Sign me up. We need it. We need more of it in our golf world. A little bit of rivalries. And Justin Thomas, too. I want to hear more from Justin Thomas when he's out on the golf course. After watching the Brady and Mickelson, Tiger and Peyton, what did they call it?
The match.
The match?
Just the match.
Yeah. After the match, I want to hear more from Justin Thomas. But right now, our picks after day one, Jason Day is the leader along with Brendan Todd. Both of them are at 500 par. Day tees off at 103. Brendan Todd at 850. But let's see here. At 3 under par is Tony Finau and Gary Woodland. Both of our picks are 2 off the lead. I had Finau yesterday. I heard Rob picked Finau as one of his guys, too. I'm rooting for Tony Finau, but you have Brooks Koepka is 1 off the lead, and this is a big storyline here is because he's tracking for 3 straight Wanamaker trophies today or this weekend. But all the action gets underway this afternoon on ESPN, which is another gripe of Ryan's.
Oh, boy.
You had it out with Dirt?
I wouldn't say we had it out. He was just saying that how awesome it was to be watching golf in prime time and like seeing the rounds finish up at 7 p.m.
Right at night,
don't disagree with. I said, you know, I don't want to rain on this parade, but the fact that you had Tiger,
but watch me take a big dump on it.
You had Tiger, Rory, and Justin Thomas, the three of the either best or most intriguing players in the world, go off at 8:33 in the morning, and no coverage, no mainstream coverage until 1 p.m. Yep. That is unforgivable.
Well, get on the internet and watch it then, bro.
I shouldn't have to. And that was kind of my point, is that every other major sporting event, like you consider the golf major essentially akin to being like playoffs for other sports. I mean, significance-wise, you would never have to find a way to stream the first quarter of a conference championship game. Because it just wasn't on TV yet.
Well, the Pac-12 does it. Remember when they got bumped for truck racing on FS1?
Guess what? The PGA Championship ain't the Pac-12. I just think it should matter more that the entirety of your majors should all be televised mainstream without having to stream it.
Facts. All right, let's talk some college football. You'll never guess what Dabo Swinney is talking about now. All of a sudden, Dabo's all for it. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. Hey, if you haven't seen the Netflix documentary, That Little Old Band from Texas, it's about ZZ Top. Awesome. Highly recommend. Recommend, recommend, recommend. Push that button. All right? Get on it. Hey, last night, we had news from John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News. He actually posted this story really early in the morning, like when I woke up around like 4. And he posted this story about how the Pac-12 has met with the We Are United group. And they said that it was a healthy and productive exchange. And it was about mainly health and player safety. And the list of demands that the Pac-12 players put in front of the conference and said, meet them or we're out. It said health and safety were the main talking points over a conversation that Larry Scott was involved with last night with the players involved with the We Are United. And that one thing that was not really talked about much, but was brought up, was the 50% of football revenues being shared with the student athletes. And the comment from the league was, you know, it's not something the schools are going to be supportive of. The path to student athletes becoming employees is going to be an issue, right? And we all know that. And so it is good that they're kind of working towards the right direction. And I think there's a lot of reasonable things that the players in league can meet in the middle on and come to a conclusion on. The pay for play is not. It just won't be. Anytime you're going to be taking money out of the conference, just not going to happen. It's going to be a non-starter. But those conversations are ongoing. And as more and more momentum starts being gained for a heavier player stipend or to go to a model where players are getting paid for name, image, and likeness and things of that sort. You're seeing a lot of people starting to change their tune on how this looks. And, you know, if you go back even just a few months ago, almost a year ago, you have coaches like Dabo Swinney.
It's a dadgum mistake.
When he was talking about the players getting paid, he said, as far as paying players, professionalized in college athletics, that's where you lose me. I'll go do something else because there's enough entitlement in this world as it is. He also signed a $93 million contract to be the head coach at Clemson. But he made it crystal clear where he stood. As far as paying players, professionalizing college athletics, that's where you lose me. I'll go do something else because there's enough entitlement in this world as it is.
Will ya?
I now present you with Dabo Swinney yesterday.
There are some great things, and I think you talked about some of the revenue stuff. I've always been for these guys getting some type of lump sum. I've just always wanted to tie it to graduation. And, always good, when you have good conversation. And but as far as my guys, man, they always have had a voice.
Now, no, you haven't, Dabo, because I just read a direct quote from you.
Hold
as far as
here.
Paying players, professionalizing college athletics, that's where you lose me. I'll go do something else because there's enough entitlement in this world as it is. That is a direct quote from Dabo Swinney himself.
Uh-huh.
Now, you can't sit there and now just say, I've always been for paying them, but only if it's tied to graduation. I agree, though. Like, if you tie it to graduating or, using, your scholarship productively to get a degree, sure. Yeah, if that's the qualifier you want to have on it, go ahead and do it. But we know that that's just not the truth. That is, the winds have changed. The athletes do have a voice, and that's that entitlement, quote unquote, entitlement that you were talking about right there is what these players are asking for. And I think it's starting to become more and more clear. It's not an entitlement. It's
what they're owed.
It's what they're deserved, right? Of a multi-billion dollar industry that got guys like Dabo Swinney a $9.3 million per year salary to be a college football coach.
It's just given them a small piece of the gigantic pie.
That's right. And this will, and I guarantee you, the reason why this tune is changing is because it's being used to get that quote that I read is being used against him on the recruiting trail, right? Like, I mean, that's why these coaches change their mind. It's not because all of a sudden he has this epiphany that college athletes are deserving of money. And, he probably still thinks very similar to what he did before, and that if you give college athletes any sort of money, they will become entitled. What he's realizing, and this is where coaches change their mind, is that you may lose some games because you're not going to be getting those players. And Clemson recruits at such a ridiculously high level. It's not hurting him, obviously, too badly because they had one of the best recruiting classes in the country last year.
And, oh, by the way, number one in the coaches poll.
But this is where you look at when the winds change enough and the players are speaking their mind and they have a voice. And I'm not saying that, Dabo ended that with the players on my team always have a voice. And I'm not saying that they never have or that they don't on his roster, but this is an about face that, people can see right through. And when coaches make these broad and sweeping claims, like, that's when I'm going to step away from the game. Hey, you change your tune a year later, people realize it. People remember it. And Dabo, man, as you would say,
it's a dadgum mistake.
It is, isn't it?
Funny how that works.
Isn't it? But we have another layer to the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry as well. Look at this. Back-to-back rivalry segments going on. Apparently on Monday, the Big Ten coaches had a coaches-only conference call. And Ryan Day was speaking to the assembled coaches about, a plan of return and a plan of action. And he was interrupted by Jim Harbaugh during that, asking him about a photo that had surfaced online of his linebackers coach instructing his players. And he used the coach's call as the Big Ten snitch line. And to that, I guess Ryan Day said, that's not something that we'll address now. We handle our things internally or whatever. But Bucknut, I think, is a website, a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's basically a fan site.
Yeah. Bucknut is reporting that in a players meeting, Ryan Day went to his team after that conference call and said, we're going to hang 100 on him.
I love it. I love it. I am here for it.
Those are the things that make college football great. And the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry.
And I hope they try.
The Michigan-Ohio State rivalry is a great one. And like Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and, you know, jawing back and forth. You have Woody Hayes being a surly old man whose car broke down and refused to drive. You know, or was it Schembechler that did that? Refused to drive and get help in the state of Ohio. So
yeah,
it's either one way or the other, but refused to get help in that state. So they walked.
Well, and you know, if the shoe was on the other foot, Harbaugh do the exact same thing because he has. We've seen him try to hang 100 on USC, the whole what's your deal with Pete Carroll. Like, he's a guy that will hold that grudge. So if these guys are like right now, Harbaugh, there's nothing he can do about it. He has tried to beat Ohio State, has not. But I think that this more fuel to the fire for this thing is just awesome. I think we need more of this.
What needs to happen, though, is we need to have a, competitive football game between the two. Ohio State has won every game since 2012. That's 8 in a row. 56-27, 62-39, 31-20, 30-27 in double overtime. Remember, that was a good game back in 2016. 42-23, 42-28, 42-41. That's a pretty good game. And then 26-21. The last three seasons, it has not been close. And no. Ohio State is dominating this rivalry. So if Jim Harbaugh really does want to get some juice to this thing, it's not going to be calling Ryan Day out on your conference call, bro. It's going to be actually having competitive
games. Finding yourself
in
the win column.
You're dang right. And getting a W there. And if that happens, this rivalry is going to take off. It is going to take off. And I love it. I love it when the big brands, there's a little bit of that hate there. And I really do hope Ohio State tries to hang 100 on Michigan. Even though I like Michigan, I have no problems with Michigan. I have no problems with Harbaugh. But if any coach says he wants to hang 100 on another team, sign me up.
I'm here for it.
All right. Big news out of college football as well, coming late last night from Kyle Bondegura of ESPN. He covers the Pac-12 and it involves the local schools. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. It's Friday night. All right, it is 7:50 on your Friday morning. Dusty Hera, Ryan Buckley with you. Thanks for being with us, bros. Cam's on vacay. We have our Weekend Would You Rather coming up, top of next hour. And then more of your sports movies that you'd like to see into a TV show.
Weekend Would You Rather with a twist and a prop.
Twist? I wonder what this prop is. I wonder what this prop is that you have.
I will tell you, it was a stocking stuffer. Literally was in my stocking at Christmas, this prop.
All right, so it's small. All right. Got some more college football, though. Kyle Bondegura, who covers the Pac-12 for ESPN, ever heard of it? He had a report last night around 9:30. The Big Sky is moving forward with plans to play an 8-game conference schedule in the spring. They met yesterday, the Big Sky did, and will reconvene today. No plan has been finalized on a move, but the 13 teams in the Big Sky would actually put the FCS level at a threshold where they could no longer hold their championships in a playoff. If you think about it, though, it would make sense if the Big Sky is not playing. They have 13 teams, right? And like historic powers in FCS football, Montana State. You have Eastern Washington. Weber State has had a hell of a run the last couple of years. They have got some great football programs that, look, it's a power conference in the FCS levels. The Big Sky is. It's a very good conference, but then you add that to the Colonial Athletic Association, which also has moved to the spring. That has got James Madison in it, Richmond, Towson, all teams. Maine had a great run a couple of years ago into the semifinals. They have got very good and dominant programs in the Colonial as well. They have already decided they're going to bump to a spring schedule, as has, you know, the very first conference to do this, who's been the leaders on all of these things, from canceling their conference basketball tournament to moving their football to the spring. The Ivy League, the MEAC, the Northeast, and Patriot Leagues all have canceled their seasons, and the SWAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, is also planning on a spring schedule that they will announce shortly. So when you look at it, over 50% of the schools would not be participating in the fall, which according to the NCAA is their threshold for having a fall championship in football. So you wouldn't have 50%. So I would assume that if the Big Sky does make that announcement today, the rest of the FCS will follow in suit, which also puts into question, you know, obviously Portland State's schedule would be moved to the spring. Eastern Washington, and I know we got a lot of alums of those programs that are local and listen to this show, and Montana State for that matter. All of those programs would be bumped to the spring, and everybody else will probably do it. I mean, it just makes sense at that point to move the entire FCS and their playoff into the spring. But you also look at, that's who Oklahoma was going to play, was an FCS program. They were going to play Missouri State to start the season off, and they wanted to move that one, I think, to August 29th is when they wanted to play that game. But hey, Missouri State, if you're not playing football in the fall, that game ain't going to happen. And so it could have a ripple effect into the Big 12 and ACC, which are conferences that are still trying to fill their schedule out with some FCS opponents. And look, other Group of Five conferences too, you know, Mountain West plays a lot of games against Big Sky opponents. So could put them in quite the pickle there. I would expect that decision to be made a little bit later on today on the FCS. But it sucks for, you know, all those Big Sky programs. You know, if you've got NFL talent littered across those rosters, you know, and they're not going to bump back the draft, and this is where a lot of those guys make their hay and make a name for themselves, is in their final seasons where they can see, you know, a steady production over the course of their career. And then if that happens over their senior year, boom, you get chances in the NFL. You know, Dante Olsen is a great example of this. A linebacker out of Montana, who's a local guy, he's from down in Medford, went to Cascade Christian, and he had a stellar career at Montana. But it wasn't just like 1 year that did it for him. It was four consecutive years, and teams were like, all right, we're gonna roll the dice on this guy. We're going to bring him in his senior year, where he was, you know, I think the defensive player of the year in the FCS level. Dude, that got him a shot. He's with the Philadelphia Eagles now, you know? And that, what happens to guys like that if they're playing in the spring? That sucks. And will the NFL do anything to try and, I guess, cater to guys like him? Do you have a supplemental draft just for guys whose seasons are bumped to the spring?
It's a really unique situation. And unfortunately, I think that until we know how the first parts of it are going to play out, we don't really know what the fallout is going to be like, because there are so many moving parts to it. I mean, what the leagues are doing, what the teams are doing, what your future potential prospective employers are doing, how they're working with their schedule, what concessions they're willing to make. It, I mean, we've known that, you know, this pandemic has thrown tons of logistical things into a big mess, and this is no different.
Yep. And that will be a big decision the Big Sky is making, because honestly, the fate of the FCS season in the fall hinges on the Big Sky and if they play. Because if that 50% marker is not met, then there is no fall championship and they could cancel it right there. And if you do that, you know, everybody else has got to fall in line and they'll just probably move everything over to the spring, which would it set up for a fun spring. That's for damn sure. And maybe the FCS, does the FCS maybe just work better in the spring?
It might. I mean, it's...
it sucks. I mean, it's so different.
But then, yeah, I mean, but having the... that whole segment of football playing a different time of year would throw a huge wrench in the things you're talking about, the ability to be drafted and work out and whatnot.
But if it means more money, you telling me that, well, you know, Portland State or Eastern Washington, if it makes your television deal out of it?
And if it makes the rest of your athletic department viable, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that is the latest news out of the Big Sky. It appears that they will be moving to a spring schedule announcement. Could come as early as today on that one, according to Kyle Bonagura of ESPN. We're efforting Bonagura to join the show. Hopefully he joins us early next week for an update on that and Pac-12 and where things stand in the Pac-12. All right. Coming up next, always awkward, often offensive, exceedingly entertaining. It's time for our weekend. Would you rather?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.